surface, everything's just fine. But nervous doesn't describe what's going on behind these eyes. It's just too easy to fake a smile.
Hey there, welcome back to another episode of Bed Talks. We are so excited this morning.
Woohoo!
I don't know. I need another woohoo from you.
For those of you, well, we'll get on with that. But for those of you who aren't aware, right now we're in two different time zones.
Absolutely.
If I'm not mistaken, our person that we are interviewing is over in
Sweden,
which is about what, 5-6 hours?
6 hours ahead of us.
Okay. Now I'm an early bird, so I'm an early riser. But early rising to this, it's a little different for me. I'm normally in my own world, okay? But nonetheless, we are so happy to have our guest. Continue with yours, Miss Elizabeth.
Thank you, honey. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So we are really excited to have Sarah Yuckin on the show today. Man, Sarah is a relationship coach. I know one of the things you talk about is relationship anxiety. And then you have a podcast called You Love and Learn. She has really built a great community around talking about different topics about love. And I can't wait to hear about Sarah and her journey of how she arrived here. So welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you so much for being
here. He loves the applause. He loves the applause. So, yeah, tell people a little bit about yourself and about your community and about, you know, how you got started on this journey.
Yeah, so I've talked to a lot of people who kind of get started with relationship coaching because of a need that they once had in themselves, and that's kind of similar to my story. And so I had to kind of learn the things that I was never taught so that I could help myself first and then kind of help others on their journey. And so I was feeling anxious in my relationship. I've been with my boyfriend Nate for 6 years, and I'm so grateful for him. I hope for many more years together. But at one point in the relationship, I was very stuck. How do I know he's the one? What if this doesn't work out? Am I missing any red flags? And I was hyper focusing on the things that I thought could make us not work instead of focusing on all the amazing ways that we were working. And so that caused me a lot of internal confusion. And once I was able to see that, ooh, this is actually more about me than it is about him, because he's so amazing. So why am I not feeling this amazingness towards him that I should be, I guess, or I thought I should be in my head? And I realized it was because a lot of fears were inside me. And so I started to process those, share my story online. And a lot of people started asking, how did you learn all this? And can you help me with this same anxiety that I also am experiencing? And that's how I created You Love and You Learn, and then started coaching others on the same thing I went through.
I was just going to say, when you mentioned some members of your audience asked, how did you learn all this? The first thing that came to mind was experience. Experience, yeah. A lot of times is the best teacher. And it sounds like from what I've heard thus far, that is your main level of educating others through your own experiences. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure that you've studied the effects of anxieties and relationships, but I'm just a firm believer that the best knowledge, the best wisdom that can be attained is that knowledge and wisdom stemming from experiences.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's anything better than someone saying, I know exactly what you've been through and there's nothing wrong with you. Here, let me help you kind of work through that and feel more confident in it for yourself. Because I just remember when I first heard someone explaining their own anxiety, I felt such a relief. And I was like, I'm not alone in this. Other people are in the same boat. And even hearing other experts in relationships, like the Gottmans, talk about how, oh yeah, it's normal to sometimes question if you're with the wrong partner. I was like, oh my gosh, it is, you know, just getting that permission slip from other people. So I completely agree that the experience can be so impactful for others.
And if I could stop just for another moment, she mentioned the Gottmans. Mm-hmm. Isn't that whom you've actually researched and taken?
So the Gottmans, for the people out there in the audience, I think some people might be aware and some people might not be aware. They've spent like thousands and thousands of hours researching couples and individuals and people that are dating, people that are parenting, people that are in relationships. And they really identified like trends of what works and what doesn't work. And I like it because it's quantifiable evidence that there are certain things when you do it in a relationship, it works. But what I also like is their realism. how you're going to have conflict or healthy friction, I like to call it, and how you're going to have differences. And it's really how couples decide to continually commit to those differences. It's how they resolve through conflict, because the way you resolve through conflict really addresses how you show up for your partner, right? If you could be respectful in that most difficult moment, and how it's just this continuous process. And I think the other thing that people forget in relationships, it's not linear. So like, you were in this great relationship and you were like, this is great. But then I get it, because sometimes some of us are self-sabotagers in our mind. So we curate something that's not even happening on the other end without checking in with our, you know, significant other, our spouse, or, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend. And the thing about it that I liked is that you kind of said, wait a minute, it's not Nate, this might be me. And that's that self-accountability piece that I think a lot of times we miss, because I do coach people, and it's funny to me that people will say, I want this to happen. And then when it shows up, they're like, this person's doing all of this, they're doing this, they're doing that. So then it's like, I try to redirect them, like, okay, these are things you said you wanted. Because sometimes I don't think it's that they don't want it. I think they fear it will stop, or that they will be hurt in the process. So it's really their fears just amping up, which keeps them in this perpetual cycle of not connecting. So I like that you term yourself like, in your community, you know, your term is like relationship anxiety. Can you talk a little bit, you know, to people about like how you were able to overcome that in your relationship over time?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important to acknowledge that a lot of who I'm talking to, first of all, is in like a healthy, supportive relationship, because I think there can be anxiety where you're like, ooh, I don't think I'm being treated very well. Right. And you kind of question that. But I'm talking about people who are in that supportive, healthy relationship. But the anxiety really does stem from these fears that are within you. So for me, fear of failure, fear of not being able to predict how the future would look for us, fear that, you know, things wouldn't work, fear that I would get hurt, whatever it was. Once I started realizing those were my own fears, then that probably would show up in all of my relationships. You know what I mean? It's not like there's going to be some magical person where I don't have any fear if those are within me internally. And so how I started working through that was to first really understand those fears and, you know, just why am I so worried about this? Do I not think I can handle these fears? And starting to check in with what is this worst case scenario that I'm concocting in my mind? And is that actually something that's going to happen? Or is it just me creating this narrative based on maybe things I've seen in my own life or my own experiences? So I had to start understanding what was behind these fears and then start building more trust in myself to be able to work through the fears, because I wasn't really trusting myself to handle life. I was just kind of being a victim of the fear. And so that was a big step. And then another step was I had to unlearn some of the beliefs I had about relationships, which were that they should just be perfect all the time, and that your partner is responsible for making you feel good instead of you having to take that self-accountability like you share, Elizabeth. And some of these rom-com narratives that had kind of soaked into my mindset, I had to really work to unravel those. So those are kind of two places that I had to start, and there's others that we can talk about, but I'll stop there to see what's coming up for you.
Well, I have to say this. First of all, I love the artwork behind you. I know the audience may not be able to visually see, but I can. Behind Sarah is, it looks like just various designs of the continents throughout the world. Not actually like those. But look, I want to get into this. Oh, wow.
Oh, it's more. I like that.
I like that.
Yeah. Nice. It's like I've had this for, I think, 10 years now. It's like, I wish I knew the artist, because it's in a lot of my designs, like on social media, my background. A lot of people ask, like, who designed this? But I got it from Urban Outfitters like 10 years ago. Oh, wow. And it's been like my safe space that travels with me to different apartments and countries. But I just loved the different, representation. Yes.
Travel pun fully intended. Like, I love that. Just
it almost reminds me of personalities.
Yeah.
Different personalities. I mean, you know, when you see just a cacophony of all these designs. But look, I want to go into patterns, because as I was listening to you, talk on, anxieties, how to deal with them, how to cope with them, how to take self-accountability for them. I just kept hearing in my mind patterns, patterns, patterns. One thing, and Elizabeth would tell you that I define patterns as anything that happens three or more times. That's Kay's definition of what a pattern is, okay? If you've been in multiple relationships and each one of those relationships have ended the same way, okay, three or more relationships, in my opinion, that's a pattern. And I know opinions can be dangerous, but this is my opinion based on what I've not only seen, but even through my own experiences. When you've gone through those types of patterns, Sarah, how easy or how hard is it to break that cycle? And in this case, I know we're talking about anxieties. How hard is it to break that pattern of anxieties that have been carried from relationship to relationship? If I can paint a picture, it's almost like carrying a suitcase. You know, me and Elizabeth do a lot of traveling. And there are times this is a huge compliment to her. I don't care where we travel to, where we travel from. As soon as we get to the hotel, Elizabeth is unpacking her suitcase, putting all of her items, hanging them up. And I joke with her a lot. I'm like, this is amazing. Every time. Kay, I keep my eyes in the suitcase.
He does. Okay.
When we return home, guess what? We returned from an out-of-town vacation, I guess, about 3 weeks ago. Elizabeth, like clockwork. Now, I'm going somewhere with this. Like clockwork, she will unpack her suitcase, of course, as most people should do when they return home from a vacation. Kay, I will still have my clothes lingering in the suitcase. As a matter of fact, in our guest room, it's still a suitcase with clothes lingering. My whole point of this, Sarah, so you don't get lost in the shuffling, he's talking about all this traveling. Well, with relationships, you have some people who have the ability to unpack all of the luggage, to unpack all of the clothes from a prior trip or a prior relationship. Then you have individuals like me, I just keep the same suitcase. I keep the same emotions. I keep the same anxieties I may have had from a previous trip, i.e. relationship. Speak on that for a moment.
Yeah, so I definitely think, I first of all believe that patterns absolutely can be changed. So I don't want to discourage anybody from attempting to by any means. And I've changed a lot of my patterns. And I don't think it's this easy overnight thing, because a lot of these patterns have been ingrained in us for our whole life, right? So if we have fear and we want to self-protect, then that's probably not just a fear from maybe one or two or three relationships. That's probably a fear that's been with us since we were younger, and we either subconsciously picked up or directly picked up from our caretakers, or from even just like the middle school locker room, like, you know, some comment that people made about what it means to be in a relationship. Those things don't necessarily just go away. And so that's why it takes some intentional energy to shift them. And I think one other piece I'll bring into this conversation is how you identify. So for example, if you identify as being very anxious, and I've been guilty of this, saying I have anxiety or I'm anxious in my relationship, then it's really hard to change a pattern to being more calm or trusting or peaceful if your brain is trying to keep you in the box of what you identify with, because it's hard to change an identity. It's hard to actually start making that change. And I can give an example with the traveling just to get people thinking in a different way. Like if you are the type of person that says, well, I'm a homebody, I don't like to go anywhere, then if someone starts proposing, hey, let's go on this weekend trip, let's try this, well, it's going to clash with your identity of being a homebody. And so the same is true in a relationship. If you want to change some of your patterns, you're also going to have to change how you view yourself as being someone in a relationship.
I like the word that you use, intentional. You know, it has to be intentional for any level or form of change. You know, it's not something that's just going to fall in your lap, and it's something that is just going to happen. Nor is it something that your mate, your significant other is fully responsible for. It has to be intentional on your part as well. Yeah. That's the trigger, I think, for change.
And let me know if you guys agree with this, but I was going to say, sometimes I think what we do unintentionally is we try and to avoid something, or like, I want to stop doing this. And instead, I recommend with my clients, like, let's focus on what you're trying to create or what you do want. Because when you're focusing on, I don't want to do this, I don't want to keep acting like this, I don't want to think this, then those thoughts are just continuing to pop up in your attempt to avoid them. And so looking in a new direction of, what do I want to create? What do I want to build? And start slowly making that a reality.
Mm.
No, I like that you are you know, taking it in that direction, because I think if you could look at the opportunity in the situation versus what you feel like you might be losing, it can make you open your eyes a little bit more. And I think of it like as a breakup, you know, post breakup from somebody. Oh, it's the worst. It's like, you just, I don't want to be in love. You're playing a sad love songs. You're eating your ice cream. You're just hibernating. And you just are so fixated on that feeling, which I think it's okay to have that feeling for a little bit, right? Because you need that healing process. But sometimes people get so fixated on it, they don't see the opportunity that that breakup has afforded them. Because maybe it was an unhealthy relationship. Maybe it was a dynamic there that was affecting how you were showing up in life, that it just wasn't good for you. And I think the shift for people a lot of times on the heels of a breakup is when on the other side, they're like, man, I didn't realize how cloudy my judgment had become. I don't realize how toxic this was to me. I'm now starting to identify who I am as a person. So I think that I like your approach a lot about focusing on the opportunity that's there versus staying stuck in what you feel like you could be losing. And I want to go back to something you said earlier. I like the fact that you're like, I could have been the victim here. And I think we do that in our relationships. Like, what's very interesting to me in the beginning of a relationship, we're so excited about that person. We talk them up. We lean into their best attributes. And then when people break up, it's like all the bad stuff. And we forget some of the things that drew us to that person. And one of the things I really appreciate about Kay is, like, he'll always say this. He'll be like, I can't, like, say people that I've been with are all bad. Like, there's a lot of good aspects to them as well. It just wasn't a compatibility totally with me over time. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be better about acknowledging that people are holistic and there's a lot of gray to us, a lot of experiences that shape who we are. So I like that you talked about that piece. And I think the second thing I was going to say is, it is hard when you are in a healthy relationship and people don't expect that. And I mean that because we are bringing all this baggage, all these experiences. We are waiting for the other shoe to drop. It is easy. We're human. We're not robots. We talk about this all the time, to lean into, okay, yep, this one's going to be just like the last one. Or this person has this attribute. Especially we see an attribute that's similar to someone we've been with. We're like, we can go down that road very easily, but it's so important to unpack and really allow that person to be who they are and to really examine who they are and to, like, give them that opportunity to prove out who they are, as opposed to assuming. I think assuming is, like, the downfall of many relationships versus leaning into curiosity. So I'm curious, how did Nate handle all of this when you were going through all this anxiety and he's showing up?
Look how she lit up.
I know.
You said, Nate, I know the audience can't see, the facial expression just told it all.
I see dimples and everything.
Nate, wherever you are, hello, sir. Hello, sir. Hello, sir. And I think before Sarah answers, I think before we even started the podcast, Sarah was talking about how, well, maybe it was at the beginning of the podcast, Sarah was talking about just how grateful she was to have this type of relationship for 6+ years. And I think I took a sneak peek at your Instagram page, and it was something that stood out with me when you were talking about the celebration of 6 years and that you didn't think it would go this long, but here it is 6 years later. But you used a word that I actually love, especially when it's in the right context. You used the word contentment. And then you went on to say that contentment normally has a negative connotation. And it does, because it almost gives the appearance of, oh, I'm just going to settle. Now, that's fine. But if you are settling with happiness, with peace, then it's actually great gain if you are content. And it sounds like that's the case with you and Mr. Nate, as far as how contentment is concerned in this relationship.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. I looked up the definition of content one time, and it means peacefully happy. Mm. Like, it's in a state of peaceful happiness. Like, that's just, I feel like for me, I don't know, like, peaceful and happiness are just two words that anyone, I think, objectively would say are positive and that they would like more of in their life. But then we hear, oh, yeah, well, content, like, oh, settling. It's like, I love what you just said, though. Okay, if you're intentionally settling, that can be a really positive thing. And all commitment in some senses is settling, because you're not getting every other experience. You have to kind of eventually settle down, and settling down doesn't mean a negative thing. It just means that you're choosing something. And so, Yeah, that's a really important piece of this puzzle. And I think to go back to the original question, which is how did Nate handle it? I smiled just because I admire how he handled it. I don't think I could have done the same thing. And it made me have this huge epiphany that it was really a me problem and not a him problem. Because to give a little background context, we had a very big kind of moment where I kind of word vomited and was crying. I don't know if I love you the same anymore. And if I heard someone else talking about this, I'd be like, oh my gosh, she said what? Like, that's just, you don't say these things. But in my head, I was so anxious. It felt like a volcano that just kind of had to erupt because I hadn't been able to process this fully and really talk about it. I felt so scared that it would hurt him and I didn't want to do that. So eventually it came out and he met me with so much kindness, so much compassion. He was not taking it personally. He said, I understand what you're going through. Like, it sounds like you're just really scared. I hope that you don't want to leave the relationship, but if you do, I understand. Like, he was just very much focused on how he could support me in that moment. And that's kind of where in my head I was like, what the heck are you doing? Like, you got to fix this. And that's really what ultimately led me to kind of going on this quest for information. And so I was very grateful that he didn't kind of go running out the door when I said that, because I probably wouldn't have been able to handle it if someone told me the same thing.
I like that, because there are people in relationships that could be a little more secure and a healthy, you know, how to create that healthy relationship, and someone who could be anxious and they're always like, how do I handle that? Because there's a lot of ups and downs to that, because they could be showing up and like saying, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. But that person could just have so many fears inside, mm-hmm. right? That affect that relationship dynamic. So man, like, he was practicing like active listening 101. Like, he didn't listen defensively. He didn't attack what you were saying. He validated what you were saying, which for an anxious person is like, oh, okay, you get where I'm coming from. And then he said, look, if you need that space to do that, okay, that's fine. Which gave you space to see, wait a minute, I really don't want that. But the fact that he's willing to like lean into my happiness, that says a lot about how he feels about you. So that probably reinforced the fact that you were like, this is a good guy.
And what was that course again? What was that course? You said 101. You said...
I said active listening 101. I just made that up.
You guys can actually join her class, active listening 101. I've been a member of this class now for about 48...
Wait, I'm still working on it too.
For about 48 years. And trust me, it does work. Active listening 101.
No, he's right. Because like I... You know, like when we have our healthy friction, and sometimes it gets a little heated. It's like, oh. I'm like, man, okay, you know what? I wasn't listening. Because it's a natural, and when I say listening, I mean like really listening. Because
it's a difference what we talk about hearing.
Hearing and listening. Because I think the thing is, as humans, there's a way we perceive ourselves and there's a way others perceive us. Mm. And I think that's why relationships are so hard. Because the way we think we may be showing up, when we're in a relationship, it's exposed. It's like, it's a mirror. And it's not that like necessarily the way that other person is perceiving you is totally on point, right? Like, you may not really be feeling what they think you're feeling, but that's the communication and the connective piece. And I think that's the hardest part for couples, is that it's easy to assume, it's easier to shut down communication, it's easier to avoid. Mm. And that's what creates the buildup, the buildup, the buildup, and then diarrhea of the mouth, right? Where you just go off.
No, what did Sarah call it? Vomit. What'd you
vomit.
Call it?
Yeah, vomit. Yeah, the word vomit. The word vomit.
Where no, she said vomit. I'm sorry, say that again.
Word vomit.
Word vomit. That's it. That's it. Yeah, I like that. I may have to use that one.
Word vomit is a lot prettier than the other one. But like, it's just like, and you always use that analogy of the balloon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You want to share that?
Well, the analogy of the balloon is pretty simple. I'm a very simple person, okay? And I like explaining things in simple manners. When I talk about the balloon, the inflated balloon, that's just it's kind of a buildup, okay, of things that we are holding in. And if Sarah said something to me that I didn't like, or I said something to Sarah that she did not like, and she did not express that to Kay, the balloon gets a little bigger. It's almost like it blows a little bigger, and vice versa, to a point where now there are things that you are not expressing or releasing. The things that you are not liking or feeling comfortable with are now just enlarging, okay? To where it gets to a simple point where, I don't know, Elizabeth may say something about, hey, you forgot the bread, Kay? And I just burst. because I haven't released, you know. But when you actually release what it is you're trying to express, whether it goes over well or not, you know, that balloon starts to deflate, you know. So I think in relationships, like Elizabeth was saying, you know, I do the same thing. There are a lot of times I'm not listening to her. I may hear her, but I'm not listening to her. But on the flip side, when I do start to listen, then I think that's when you're able to put actions to it. Listening and hearing are two different things. I can hear you all day. Listening, it, in my opinion, is an absorption of what is being said. You're absorbing it. You're chewing on it. You're thinking on it. You're marinating on it. And then hopefully you're applying it.
Yeah, that's so important. And I think what can be hard when you're trying to listen, and I think we talked a little bit about this when we spoke on my podcast, Elizabeth, about how you can be defensive listening and trying to then kind of be right. And so it's sometimes hard to listen to your partner if you feel like it's going against your perception of the experience, but it doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means that there's two unique people with different perceptions. And there's actually probably parts that you're both right about and both wrong about.
Right.
And so that's something me and Nate talk about a lot. We'll kind of joke like, well, yeah, you're right, but you're also wrong. And like, I'm right, but I'm also wrong at the same time.
I like that. That's actually giving both people a say in the sense of like, okay, some of your perspective is correct and some of your perspective is correct. Because usually that is what it is. It's like when you hear a story from two people, they always say the truth is somewhere in the middle, right? When you hear two sides of a story. So I feel like that's a balanced approach to it. Like, yep, I feel like I could be right in this way. And as you dig into the argument or the disagreement, there are parts of both that where both of you are right. And Kay is a great listener. Like yesterday was just not a great day for me. I was literally having like a meltdown because it was just so much happening and percolating. And I called him. And he immediately like honed in on like, okay, he heard my tone and he was like, what's wrong? Okay, we're going to get through this. And he just guided me through the process. And I really appreciate that about him. Like he really can dial into someone's emotional state and he can steady you. Everyone does not have that ability. So I just wanted to give you a shout out.
Oh, well, you know, I'm about to get emotional here, ladies and gentlemen. But no, that's what we're here for. I always tell Elizabeth, this comes from the good book, the Bible, Iron Sharpening Iron. And whether it's me sharpening her, her sharpening me, when we do compliment one another or at least thank one another for whatever it is, whatever it may be, small, big or large, I always resort to iron sharpening iron. And the reason I normally say that is because I do believe that. I believe that in a number of ways. I believe it because there are times when we all get dull in certain areas. Sometimes our senses are dulled and those senses need to be sharpened. And I think when you are the one that's being sharpened, you appreciate it. So to reciprocate it, now you have a chance to help sharpen someone else who may be dull. In this case, if Elizabeth is dull, I hope I'm there to help sharpen and vice versa. You know, so the iron sharpening iron, it also keeps you humble. Because, again, the inflation analogy I gave with the balloon, that also can happen when you're getting a little too ahead of yourself. That also can happen when you're thinking too much of yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. But when you kind of counterbalance it with, that's iron sharpening iron. Because I may be sharp today, but I may be dull tomorrow, and I'll need that reciprocated. That's a humbling effect also for me. You know, I'm glad I just happened to be present. I'm glad that Elizabeth called. I'm glad that, you know, whatever she was dealing with, I was able to help to some extent sharpen that iron. But for me, it was also humbling because I know it could easily change today, tomorrow, or whatever, where now she'll be the sharpener.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's a part of relationship anxiety that's unfortunate, is that it's very self-focused. So instead of how can I help my partner and then also having them help me, people are kind of scanning for, am I getting enough out of this? Or, you know, what's in this for me? And it's unintentional, right? It's not like I want to be selfish, but people I think are just, they're kind of so just in their own world that they're not trying to, one, sharpen their own iron, but then also help sharpen their partners too. And they're just kind of thinking so in their head that it's hard to see where that yin and yang and like balancing act comes in. And so I think once I focused more on how I could give love too, not just how much I was receiving, that really made a big difference.
Right. I love that call out because I think in a relationship, when you truly are committed, you do have to think of the other person as yourself, or if not more, because there are going to be moments where you feel like they're not giving you what you need, and you're going to have to lean into overcoming that hurdle, communicating it to them, but it may be imbalanced for a little bit. And I think we don't talk enough about that. Like when I hear people talk about, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. Okay, great. What are you also willing to give? Because a relationship is a team. It's not just the individual action. So I love that you call that out.
You know, and I think really one thing I've learned, you know, I do a lot of journal writing. I do a lot of, you know, listening to things, to people, to music. And I'll take, you know, something that I may have heard, whether it's from a poet, whether it's from a writer. And there was this one writer that I remember reading once, and it hit me so hard. And that writer said, we spend now getting ready for there. We spend now getting ready for there. Now, you can take that into whatever context you want to take it in. Some people spend their now here on earth getting ready for there, which is the next life, hopefully heaven. You spend all of your now getting ready for there. You spend your now in a relationship, hopefully getting ready for there, a higher plateau of that particular relationship. That's something that always sticks with me, because we're always in preparation for something. What you're preparing for is totally up to you. If you're preparing to overcome anxieties, fears, you know, that means that you are starting to prepare for whatever that now is. So to attain that there that you are hopefully heading to, you know. So that's something that always sticks out. And that's what I keep hearing, even as, you know, we're having, you know, these monologues one amongst each other. And hopefully for the audience, hopefully the audience is really getting a lot out of this.
Yeah. What comes up for me in that is just, you know, knowing that your trajectory, I think what I'm hearing you say is like your trajectory of there is kind of based on the actions you take here. And so if you want to create that momentum and the trajectory of your goals, like it's okay if they're not perfect right now, but just slow actions,
slow progressions, incremental steps. That's right. Yeah. That's right. When I'm coaching and training, you know, adolescents, students, teams, you know, I always tell them, I said, progression is not measured with how far you go from point A to point B. That's not how progression is measured. Progression is measured by taking, if it's an inch, if it's a foot, if it's a yard, towards your goal. You may not even be able to see those incremental steps, but that's what progression is, moving towards your mark, as you said, even though it may not be perfect or even visible.
It is funny you say that. So I was watching this Netflix documentary about like really powerful coaches and what do they do differently. And it's almost like they tell the behavior they want that person to have. And then eventually it seeps into their subconscious and their conscious state. So one coach was like Serena Williams' coach. And he was like, I would say to her, you're going to hit this many aces. You're going to go to the baseline at this point. And then you're going to go back and do this. He said she wasn't totally doing those things before he started coaching. But then instinctively, he saw her start to do those actions, and he kept reinforcing it. That's great that you're going and doing this. Now you're going to do this, this, and this. So it became almost a predictable thing he noticed as he coached a lot of, you know, popular tennis stars, that by embedding this thought in their process, that it shifted like how they showed up and how they acted. And I just thought it was so interesting that like that mind and how we think about things and how we curate things with people in our mind and with each other is so powerful. The story you're telling yourself, like you said, hey, I was telling myself this was going to fail. I was telling myself Nate didn't care. Whereas Nate was saying, I care, I'm here, right? So it's that reality versus that self-focus. So I really like that point.
But that's what you're saying, though. That's pretty much verbalizing the now in order to get that athlete to there.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. This is like universal. That phrase, that quote can be used in a number of ways. People may word it differently, but in a nutshell, that's pretty much what it's saying. So you're exactly right. When I'm coaching, yes, the thing is, I'm not only affirming you, but this is an old saying from the late, great John Wooden. For those of you who do not know, the Wizard of Westbrook, he had 11 championships with UCLA. But he said, you know, a good coach can see not what their player is currently, but see what their player is to become. And when you coach them in that manner, you don't coach them where they are like, okay, he or she is just, you know, they only have this ability. And you coach them ahead of that. And then eventually they start to line up with that.
And that makes me think about how we can do that same thing for our partners and like see the vision of who they can be and trust that they can get there and kind of hold that vision for them. Because obviously we can't necessarily make someone change, but if we have a vision for maybe something our partner's working on and we're like, I know that you can get there and I believe in you and give them that same support that, you know, we would give anyone that we love and care about, then they can kind of feel inspired to work towards that even more.
It's funny you say that too. Elizabeth's going to laugh at this and I don't mind sharing it. Elizabeth has a way, she has a way of getting the now prepared for the there. Let me tell you what I mean. Elizabeth would say, yep, I'm just waiting for you to take me off my job. I'm just waiting for you to retire me. And she does it in such a soft, subtle way. I'm serious. It's like a part of me is like, okay, all right, okay. Unable to do it right now, but her self-affirming words, the way she presents it, you know, it's like she's spending the now, you know, getting me ready for the there. The there meaning, you know, hopefully, prayerfully getting her off of her job, retiring her. And honestly, when and if that happens, I want to say when that happens, I will really be just applauding her for her approach because it wasn't boisterous. It wasn't aggressive. You need to hurry up and get me. She does it in such a subtle way. I know it's mind psychology that she's playing on me, you know, but truth be told, the love coach, you guys, it is real because she'll say it in such a, yeah, baby, I just can't wait until you take me off my job and retire me. We can be watching a movie and it doesn't even have anything to do with us. And she said, oh, that was so sweet what he did. I can't wait for you to do the same for me. Where did it come from? We were just watching a movie. But no, seriously.
Learn from the best, my mom. I have to give my mom a shout out. No, I was just going to say, I like what you were saying because like we look at super couples, right? And we think, oh my God, they just have it all together. No, they had to be developed with each other to get to that point. We didn't see the beginning of how it started. We didn't see how messy it was or the mess they still may have to deal with. And I think it's so easy to get caught up in the visual, right? The after effects. But to get to the after effects, there's some before effects. Like there's things that curate where they are currently. So I like that you said that. You got to put in the work. So this has been an amazing conversation with you. We totally enjoyed you. It's great to be. It's kind of weird that like we're on two totally different time zones. I keep thinking about that. It's like pitch dark here.
Yeah, because
she's in the middle of her day.
I was gonna say correct. Yes, mm-hmm. I mean so the early a.m. Like I said, I'm an early riser. Love it.
Like a 3 a.m. riser.
But normally it's just me and my time that I spend, you know, and so to actually have this type of interaction early in the a.m., that's why you guys heard my, what did I say? You said I sounded very lethargic in the beginning of the podcast. Did. Yeah, like,
woo. He's just like, woo. And I was like, where's Kay? Because Kay is like the energy. So he always has high energy.
Yeah, but we really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. And I know my schedule can be a little wonky with the United States. So I appreciate carving out the time to chat. It was really nice.
It's totally worth it. Why don't you tell people like where they can find you if they want to work with you? If there's someone out there listening who can relate to your background of being anxious in relationships and just figuring out how to get through that in a relationship.
Yeah. So if you want to follow me over at You Love and You Learn on Instagram, or my website is youloveandyoulearn.com. And I offer private and group coaching. And then I also have self-study options. So you can just buy like a webinar or a course that goes through topics that come up in relationship anxiety. So it's great to just jump in and not have to wait for someone to guide you. You can just be that self-accountable person that we talked about and just jump right in.
I love it, Sarah. So you guys, please check out Sarah Yudkin at You Love and You Learn, right? That's where her .com. That's her website. And then she's also on Instagram under her name, Sarah Yudkin. And it's spelled Yudkin. And we really totally enjoyed having you on today. We wish you and Nate the best in your future. Keep us posted on that as well. We love a good love story, right?
Oh, always. Always.
And I love learning from both of you as well. I can just see that you've worked really hard on your relationship. So it's awesome just to get to witness that and hear from people who have been really clearly like leaning in and doing that work too.
Thank you. We're a work in progress, right?
Work in progress. And present tense working.
Exactly.
Still
exactly.
Working.
So we are going to sign off for now, guys. Please, again, check out Sarah Yudkin on Instagram or her website, You Love and You Learn. www.thebrainfarm.com?
Yep.
Okay. And we are going to take off for now. We'll be back with more episodes in the future. And please remember to subscribe to future episodes on iTunes, the Anchor app, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other platforms. Until next time, XOXO. Hey, yeah, H-A-T-E-Y-O-U and all the stupid things you do.